Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Maybe Next Year, the only podcast that takes an extra week to get it right. My name is Frank.
No, we still haven't gotten it right. I'm Paul. That's the most appropriate opening ever.
Very good. Well, we just took a little extra time to make sure that, you know, we crossed all our T's and dotted our I's with our thoughts on Brandon Bean, the new Bills general manager, and other. We said we'd, of course, be back on the air once that happened, and we took a little bit longer than maybe you were hoping, but we're here now, and I don't know, are we excited? Are we apprehensive? Is it the same as it ever was? Let's get to the nitty gritty. The Buffalo Bills hired a general manager, Brandon Bean, from the Carolina Panthers organization. He knew the Sean McDermott. Very good. I did not confuse him that time with my friend.
You got both first names, because yes. I assumed Billy and Scott were going to be just thrown around during this podcast.
They hired Billy Bean. I'd be a little more, I guess, a little more intrigued maybe than Brandon Bean. But Brandon Bean's a young guy. He's been in football since he was 19, and he's just, I think, just 40 or under 40 as a general manager. Had a press conference after the 2 days after the Sabres general manager was announced, and has already made a few moves. We go to our, I think we need to go to our resident Doug Whaley hater to really sort of check in with what the feeling is coming out of Whaleyville with regards to the new general manager. So Scott, I'm going to let you have the first say here.
This is my first thoughts on our new general manager.
First thoughts on new general manager. However you want to cut it, dice it, go for it.
I'm gonna be totally in on him. I'm just gonna be irrationally in on him, and I'm gonna stay in on him forever, even after he's led us to, you know, 3 straight 2-12 seasons or 2-14 seasons. I'm gonna be all in on him.
Those would be some good draft picks, though. I mean, that's
that's true. Hey, it's the process. Trust right. The process. I think that the two biggest things I take away are, one, obviously, is clear kind of the Sean McDermott program, that Brandon Bean is on board with that on some level. We still clearly have not resolved the, you know, facto structure, which is anything that isn't resolved by McDermott and Bean has to be kind of elevated up to the owner to be the decider on, which to me is fundamentally flawed. But I think in this case, hopefully it will be less of an issue, because it's clear that the power structure is McDermott first and Bean kind of in a secondary role. At least that's my take on it, based off of everything that seems to have happened, that obviously, you know, McDermott was the one hired first, and then he brought in and then Bean comes in afterwards as someone he knew, who's better at the kind of general manager parts of the job that aren't as essentially, you know, scout related. And then the second kind of thing I was going to touch on is, I think as important as the GM kind of hire is, I think I'm just as pleased with the kind of house cleaning. Now, I understand, you know, last time on Facebook we had, I forget who it was, it might have been Brian or somebody, who was saying that, you know, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. If there are good scouts, you know, we should keep them. And I think we've done that. I mean, if I recall, there were at least two or three scouts who we did end up bringing back. But in large part, almost the rest of the entire front office has been cleaned out. So I think that's probably a good thing. And I think it's good to see them kind of putting in their own player personnel people, their own scouting people, all that kind of stuff, because I think that means there's going to be a good level of trust. There won't be this, hopefully there won't be as much backbiting and kind of leaks to the media when things don't go as well. I'm sure that stuff will happen eventually. If things don't go well, it always kind of does, but hopefully that will buy the organization a little more time to worry about what's going on the field and fixing things and internal stuff, as opposed to trying to put out fires in the media or worrying about what's going to be asked at the press conference or any of that. Again, I don't know how much that stuff even is a distraction, but I feel like it's definitely not a distraction either. Like, it's not the best distraction is no distraction. Even if it's something you could ignore, you still have to spend mental energy ignoring it. So that is my kind of thoughts on where we are right now.
Okay, Paul.
Yeah, I like the fact, and Scott touched upon this a bit, even though the power structure is a little bit different than we anticipated, we also get the impression we are getting two guys with Bean and McDermott who work well together. You have to believe that, you know, McDermott had a hand in the hire of Bean, that he enjoyed working with him, that he feels they can cooperate. It's the same thing. They brought in, you know, scouts and others that they know they're comfortable with, they know how to work with. I always do get a little edgy about that. I like to see them, you know, reach outside the organization, the people they're comfortable with a little bit more, and try and find someone who's, you know, truly talented than just someone with whom they're truly familiar. But they did make some of those hires when you look at how they've rounded out their staff. So that helped allay my fears on that topic somewhat for now. So, you know, I'm very happy with that. One other thing, you know, of interest, you know, they're hiring, you know, communication type guys. And as a communication major, someone who's, you know, big into the importance of communication, half of the job of being successful, you know, personnel manager in sports is simply knowing how to talk to people, knowing how to understand, you know, how to get the most out of people and how to communicate expectations clearly in a manner which, you know, maximizes, you know, that they fulfill the expectations. So, you know, I think everything is good with the hire, as we've kind of discussed with other instances in the past. It is easy to win a press conference. You know, you find very few GMs and new coaches and so forth who are hired and you're like, man, that's a bad hire just based on the press conference. Very few people like, hey, it's a press conference. I'm just going to randomly sodomize this puppy. And then and then that can ruin it. And then you have a bad impression. But for the most part,
I'm going to bring out my child molesting robot.
Thank you for having watched Saturday Night Live. I was going to go there.
You know what? If I had randomly just been gone down a YouTube rabbit hole the other day, I would have missed that sketch entirely. I'm like, oh, it's The Rock next to a robot on the screen capture. Let me see what this is all about. So, and he made valid points. I mean, that was what evil is. So
that is what evil is.
Yeah. Well, we'll discuss more on the nature of evil, you know, maybe next morality play, which in our other podcast.
Yes. Yes. That would actually be, and actually that intertwines with the Bills a lot, probably. We should have a dual episode sometime.
Are they evil or just bad?
Is being incompetent inherently evil, or do you have to have some intent to it?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, because it is almost evil when you think about the odds of a team missing the playoffs for as long as they have. But I wander away. Anyway, I like the hire. Again, we'll see how it factors in down the road. He's got, you know, a lot of difficulty ahead of him. He's got some star players, but they all tend to be older, except for Sammy, who is far from proven. There is not a lot of under 25, under 26 talent on this team right now, and he's going to have to be developing that in the future, and it'll be really interesting to see what they do to kind of round out this roster to build some depth at the other positions as they go through training camp and scour other teams' waiver wires for cuts and how much they seem invested in having a good season this year or if they're kind of looking ahead. So I'm kind of interested in seeing how his approach evolves with how things start to go during the training camp and regular season.
I'd like to just piggyback on a couple of things and respond to a few things. I think that I agree with Scott that there would be an inherent frustration with the owner having to make final decision on some things, except for the fact that I think these guys will be able to sort out most of their differences. You know, like it was either McDermott or Bean, I forget who, talked about that they used to both be, that they've had an extensive amount of experience working together in different capacities, and that a lot of it was you go in a room and you have a discussion and not everyone agrees, but ultimately, you know, you play some concessions and you come to a decision that everyone agrees with. So I think that, you know, when you own the team, you are always going to have the final say. I think that that's just sort of the nature of it. And I'm hopeful that that's the extent to which the Pakulas are now involved in, like, you know, player X is, you know, was suspended for the second time. You know, like maybe Darius would be an example for this, where it, you know, if this year he doesn't have his act cleaned up or something, that might be a Pegula call where they say, like, you know, he's a talented player, we could go either way on him, but the ownership has definite feelings on whether a player should be on the team or not. And I think that's okay to that extent. didn't like that he seemed to be very focused on saying things like running the football in his press conference, and he didn't quite get to 3 yards in the clouds of dust, but I didn't hear a lot of the, you know, things I was hopeful to hear for something franchise quarterback. I don't know if that's in deference to the fact that, you know, you have to at least start the season with Tyrod Taylor. But I'm hopeful that if Tyrod Taylor doesn't take the next step this year, which why would he, you know, that they'll be open to.
How do you really feel on that, Frank?
I think he's a good quarterback, and I don't think he's good enough to win a playoff game. I mean, like, that's it. Like, he's certainly not good enough to beat, you know, he's certainly not good enough, spoiler alert, he's not good enough to beat a Tom Brady team, basically, which is the kind of the gold standard for the first step of what you're trying to do with a football team is win your division, you know, and then and if you can't do that, then a wild card's okay, but really you should be trying to win your division. And, you know, if there's one thing that's boring about this league, it's that, you know, the quarterback rules the day, that the teams in the conference championships and in the Super Bowls are the teams with the good quarterbacks nine out of 10 times, or really like 19 out of 20 times. And so, you know, that seems to me should be, you know, the top priority is making sure you have the quarterback and not necessarily, you know, placated. He gave the whole tired, well, you know, we play games in December and you got to be able to run the football. Well, Jim Kelly managed to throw the football just fine in December and January. And Tom Brady seems to throw the football just fine in Boston. And Aaron Rodgers seems to throw the football just fine in Green Bay. So I kind of think what you need is a quarterback who can throw the football. Such is my position. But he didn't say anything terribly offensive to me, and he seems reasonably competent. And so that seems good. And I like that he's not a scout first, which I think is ultimately, looking back on the Whaley era, he was maybe too much of a scout and not enough of a manager of talent. And so that probably, and certainly not a manager of the other facets like the media and the coach and his relationship with the owners he seemed to struggle to manage with. So that's sort of where I stand with Bean. Any other thoughts on Brandon Bean, the Bean counter?
We're going to have lots of fun with the Bean name. I'm looking forward to that, at least for the next 3 years. Right. No, and I feel like we can maybe this summer we can delve into our idea of if Tyrod Taylor was our quarterback and Tom Brady wasn't on the Patriots and this was any other division in the NFL, how would we have done the last couple of years with or without Tyrod? But that's a story for another day.
It is. I have a good feeling about how I would answer that, but that would be good. Yes. Okay. Well, we should get to let's get to Doug Whaley's comments, and I just have the Pro Football Talk stuff up here, and I know Paul read this too, but I'll sort of set up a couple of the bigger quotes. He first of all, you know, took the full blame, sort of, you know, production business, et cetera, and he didn't produce. He was happy to leave, quote, as a party gift. We left them with 2 first round picks next year. And they talked about Whaley. He said Whaley said if he ever gets another job of that kind in the future, he'll have a very clear objective from the get-go, quote, I would make sure I secured a franchise quarterback quickly. So that opens the door on a couple of things, like, okay, good for you for figuring that out. But the more I think about it,
he played a game of Madden then?
Right. Yeah, he's like, I found this new video game. Right. I wonder if, because if you remember at the beginning of the offseason, it seemed to be like, we're going to walk away from Tyrod Taylor and there's no problems with that. Like, there was that was the plan. And then McDermott shows up and Taylor sort of gets like this second life and he gets his contract redone and the Bills trade out of the 10 spot, really, where they, you know, Patrick Mahomes is taken. And so I wonder if, you know, this is evidence of how much or how little Whaley was really involved in decision-making post McDermott. Like, really, was he just there to facilitate what McDermott wanted until the end of the draft? And this is sort of clear now, because if you wanted to secure a franchise quarterback quickly, I think you'd have to think long and hard about whether you wanted to take Patrick Mahomes or try and move up and get a quarterback this year. Paul, do you have thoughts on these comments or any of the other comments that Whaley makes?
Yeah, just looking at his comments as a whole on the quarterback thing, he put himself in a difficult space. Like, oh, we got to find a franchise quarterback. You know, that's what I would make sure I do next time is find a franchise quarterback. But I feel like anyone could say that in that position. And because there were efforts made, let's be honest, the trade for Tyrod, the drafting of EJ, bringing in someone like Kyle Orton, who had been a franchise quarterback, although never particularly good, of course. But those are the efforts all teams make that don't have franchise quarterbacks. They just didn't happen to pay off. So I thought he was a little simplistic in his, I just get a franchise quarterback next time, make sure I find one as soon as possible. Well, it's not that easy. What I've liked a little more depth in that quote would have been like, you know, what it would impress other people making the heart and is like, you know, what unique approaches would you take to try to get a franchise quarterback in the door? You know, what is it that you would do differently from that experience to try to get one versus what you actually did to try to get one? So, you know, that was part of it. He make it seem like he, you know, didn't prioritize that enough. I think he prioritized. He just had the same struggles everyone does trying to find that. Looking at some of his comments about it being a production business that Frank alluded to. Yeah, that's true. It is. I will say this for Whaley. It is so rare for anyone, it seems nowadays, to take accountability for anything in pro sports. It's a lot of blame game going on. So I'm glad he recognizes that he was flawed. You know, as good as a scout as he was, he did not, you know, do very well at all in the drafts with a cut we'll talk about later, you know, essentially coming under his tutelage, one other draft pick that just didn't work out. So, you know, he didn't do very well there. He didn't do very well managing a budget that the Bills have now lost. Stephon Gilmore, Mike Gillisley, and Chris Hogan, three very good contributors to the defending Super Bowl champion Patriots in the last 2 years. A team that should be up against the salary cap, but is not, which we talked about in the past. So, that was a huge, huge flaw of his. And you know, I'm glad he took accountability for that. I think the one other comment he made, which it was kind of like, oh, he gifted the Bills 2 draft picks next year. I think my understanding is that McDermott had as much to do with that trade as anyone. And I think he knew or had a sense that maybe Whaley was on his way out and thought, crap, you know, I need to build for the future. We can still get a decent corner later in this round. And they did with Tre'Davious White, seemingly. So I think he might have been a little bit patting himself on the back. And the fact that he also said that, you know, Ron Darby was a great pick. But let's face it, the verdict's still out on Darby. He had a great rookie season, but had a sophomore slump last year. His future is far from determined. So it was nice to see him take in my, you know, 5-second summary. It was nice to see him take accountability of it, but there were still some instances where I felt he did not have his firmly grasp on reality that helped to show why he doesn't have a job now.
Yeah, I'm not gonna throw too much, dirt on the man's grave now that he's kind of left and gone to, you know, hopefully torment another franchise. So I'll agree with Paul in terms of him, you know, taking responsibility and not kind of, you know, talking about, you know, any of the number of excuses that he could have blamed and pointed the fielder elsewhere on in terms of, the ownership or coaches or players getting injured or any number of the kind of those excuses that any kind of team sport has, because inherently when you're on a team or building an organization, there's always someone else at fault for failure. There's never just usually one person responsible. So
In the instance of Doug Whaley is where you're going with this. It was definitely Doug Whaley, yes.
Except for Doug Whaley in this case. So I appreciate him kind of taking responsibility for that, as Paul said. And yeah, I mean, I Doug was pretty quick to claim that he convinced Kansas City to give up the 2 draft picks for Mahomes.
I'm sure it had nothing to do with McDermott and Reed's relationship that ended up happening like that.
Yeah, and also nothing to do with what Kansas City probably clearly liked Pat Mahomes and really wanted to try and get him. So, like, those two things, like, he really sold him on that. So, you know, whatever. If he wants to put that on his resume, like, go ahead. Like, my resume is 100% accurate and never been questioned by anyone at all ever. So I will say that. In case
you're a federal employee, I think it has to be. Yeah, you're not. Exactly. You're not applying. For, what was it, Dan O'Leary? Well, the guy who was at Notre Dame.
Yeah, exactly. have my doctorate in coaching. best of luck, Doug. Enjoy the time off, and figure out that whole starting quarterback thing. I feel like that's something to look into. Like, see if you can work on that and finding, you know, maybe you could like write some really generic articles or something about how you need to find quarterbacks who have, you know, good arm strength and, leadership, and you can bet your future career on your ability to find one, and then have that not be held accounted. You help not be held accountable for that until like 2-3 years later.
I think he'll probably get a job. I think he would end up as like a, he could end up as a director of scouting personnel or again or something.
Yeah, director of player personnel. Yeah,
like whatever.
This is clearly the kind of the Peter principle at work. Like, you'll promoted to the level that you fail at. Like,
yep.
he got promoted one step too far. Probably he's going to be an awesome pro personnel guy one day. So
once again,
yeah.
Paul, do you have any, and this is more for Paul because he would be more conversant. Do you have any thoughts on, and I don't want to talk about hockey too much, but the fact that the Bagulas also hired their Sabres GM, Jason Botchrell, the former player, former assistant GM in Pittsburgh, also a young guy, certainly came off a lot more progressive sounding in his press conference than Bean did. I mean, he was talking about, if this were football, he would be, had been talking about, you know, developing a high passing game and finding a franchise quarterback. Instead, he talked about, you know, making sure you have centers and can play up and down the ice. Do you want to comment on that with regards to if there's like a theme that Bills fans can take away from what's going on with the Bagulas and their sports entertainment group?
Yeah, as long as Bottrell's a better hockey player than he was a better hockey GM than he was a hockey player in the NHL, that'd be great.
Right.
I think there is relevance to this discussion again because it is the same ownership, and they clearly seem to be there seem to be patterns with their hires that are worth noting because they affect the Bills. You look at the situation when the Sabres hired Dan Bylsma, a high-profile Stanley Cup-winning coach, and the Bills hire Rex Ryan, as high-profile coaches was on the market that offseason.
And who had success, not the same success as Bylsma, but, you know, had gone to conference championships and the like.
Yep, yeah, no, there was success there. And then you take someone like the Sabres did with Tim Murray, you know, a guy who's paid some dues, impressed with Ottawa at the time, and was ready to make that jump to the GM level. They thought the same with Whaley. So they did the same sort of thing with him. He had a good recommended from Pittsburgh for being very good at one specific thing, which was pro scouting. So they tried the same there. And that didn't work. So I think when they, you know, the fact that the Sabres hired Botterill, what do we see as far as coincidences go? You know, he is a systems guy. He is an importance of communication guy.
Yeah.
He is a, we're going to quickly get involved with community guys, same type of things we've seen in Bean and McDermott. So I think that, you know, if you look at the Pagula's trend right now, it's to hire these, communication systems-based type people to, you know, who are a little more focused on, you know, not being super, you know, upfront personalities. Upfront's the wrong term. Super blustery personalities.
Yeah, they're not. Like they're not showy.
Not showy. Yes, thank you. I'm glad one of us can think of words today, because it ain't me. So you know, when I what'll be interesting to see is in every instance so far, the Pagulas, no matter what they've done, has crashed and burned. So it'll be interesting to see if one of the Bills or Sabres organizations crashes and burns, and the other one is a rousing success. You know how that might change their approach in future hires. So it is just kind of interesting. Dichotomy, and something we're going to see more and more in pro sports of all types as, you know, these same ownership groups start taking control of teams in multiple leagues.
Okay. Yeah, I sort of agree. I think that there's a, like you said, there's a level of consistency with the two types of picks that they're making. And I think that they also want to finally be out of the football making decisions, right? They picked people that they seem to have a vision, and it's now like, great, go have your vision. I think you'll also see, because it's their quote-unquote first hires in these types of positions, a longer leash. That if things don't turn around for the Bills straight away, that's okay with the coach and the GM. I think maybe the Sabres or on a quicker timeline because they do have some of those key players. But, you know, I think that both teams will sort of be allowed to build the way they want to build for a bit. I don't think we'll see. Hopefully, you know, I think Terry Pegula hopes that he won't have to be on TV saying anything for a little while. Let us talk about Cyrus Kwanjo, who is now a free agent. Scott, you gonna miss Cyrus?
You're
about to throw Whaley right under the bus again, weren't you? Another Doug Whaley pick.
Yeah. Doug Whaley success story headed out the door 2 years after being drafted in the second round, or 3 years, whatever it was. Cyrus was a pick we were kind of like worried about for a while, like pretty early on. It was like,
right.
He was like, oh, he's got these knee problems and he's kind of enormous, which is good for obviously tackles, but also there's a risk of being too enormous for some of these guys. And
yeah,
that might've caught up to him a little bit. Clearly, like, he wasn't even like on the 53 man roster for a lot of his kind of first year, which isn't a good sign for a second round pick.
Coming out of college, you construct a Doug Whaley person that was completely injured? Because I think you think about that, and then you talk about the Raglan injury, and I think there was like some talk of Watkins possibly having feet issues, and like, it's like, could you just like,
no, I, Frank, I think have, you're wrong. I think you're thinking of Rex Ryan was the feet issue.
Okay. Oh, right. He did have the feet issues. Very good, Paul.
If you took Shaq Lawson's like shoulder,
Shaq Lawson, right?
Yeah, Shaq Lawson's shoulder, whatever it was. Raglan ended up tearing his ACL. I don't know if we'd count that in camp.
Right. I had them backwards. That was my bad.
But you'd be pretty close. I mean, EJ Manuel's vision, thinking skills, just general kind of arm accuracy. Those are all ailments that he had. he could get pretty close to a full human body with the injured bills from Doug Whaley's days. Best of luck to Cyrus. Obviously there were some issues, you know, I guess, kind of this off season that suggests he's got some bigger things maybe to work out. So hopefully that second round pick money,
such a weird story,
will help him with some of that. And I'm sure he will get picked up, because I'm sure at only 20, he was fairly young, from what I recall. So I'm fairly sure at only 23 or 24, he's probably got some still tread on those tires if he wants to keep going, and people are going to find a way to put him in. Yeah.
Someone will want to say he's got a lot of talent and he raw talent. He just needs to X.
Yep. I mean, as Scott mentioned, he's 23 years old, and, you know, again, the issues that happened with him the offseason, indicative that there's more problems there than meet the eye, if you will. And he's, you know, best of luck to him to try and rein those things in, because I'm sure that will not be an easy process. But he just didn't work out as a football player with this team. As a business guy, I always have to mention the cap issue. So he would have counted $1.53 million against the cap this year. His dead money is $454,000. So the Bills will save a shade over $1 million with this cut, and their total dead money for the offseason goes up to just under $5.5 million. Not terrible at this point in the year, but of course we're not at the training camp yet. We'll see if they like have other big salaries. So he joins Graham, Felton, Easley, Carpenter, and Roby Coleman on the list of dead money cap. So, you know, he just really struggled when they tried to accelerate him into a role, was not at all ready. They gave him multiple chances at development. I was somewhat surprised, as I'm sure others were, because he did seem like he provided good depth at the left tackle position and relatively cheap depth at $1.5 million. Obviously, the Bills are going to bank on Cordy Glenn staying healthy all year, which is not a bad bet to bank on, because you kind of need that to happen no matter what, if you want to have some success. Yeah. So, you know, I wish, like Scott, I wish Cyrus well. I hope he addresses the issues that he's been struggling with. I congratulate him on his recent citizenship, U.S. citizenship, which they covered on BuffaloBills.com, and hope that, you know, he's enjoying his time here as an official U.S. citizen. But from a football perspective, he was not part of the Bills' future. And you can go back to many, many tweets of mine where I was essentially saying, yeah, this is, you know, he had many opportunities to prove himself under several different regimes. And he just couldn't live up to it. But best of luck.
Okay. So long, Cyrus. Hello, Rod Streeter. I mean, these don't seem like big moves, but they seem like depth moves to me. The tight end Wes Saxon. Rod Streeter might get some play just because based on the depth chart of the wide receiving core.
Yeah, they were clearly have basically had to rebuild the entire depth chart of the wide receivers. Like,
right.
Like, yeah. Everyone between Sammy and like the last guy has to be rebuilt. So
yes,
this is and then more guys for that.
And then as soon as next year, you might have to rebuild the Sammy part too. So which we'll end up talking about at some point about whether that's a good idea or not. But I think we should save that for later. Nate Peterman becomes the final rookie the Bills sign. They get him all under contract, which is not really like a surprise, but you know,
it's always nice. I'm really glad they did this so quickly, though. I feel as if every year there's always that one guy who's strung along a little bit, and it's getting close to training camp, and they haven't signed this time. They had their OTAs. They had everyone in town be like, hey, why don't you sit down with us? We'll chat for a while about a contract. And they got them all done. So that's another thing, you know, we could talk about with the positives of Beam. Like, you know, that's it's a minor accomplishment, but it's an accomplishment.
Okay. Nate Peterman also came up in the interesting radio question today, which maybe we'll do at the end. We'll just wholesale take WGR's question because I think you're allowed to do that. About at what record would you start wanting to, or at what level of non-development would you want to consider this season a bust and, you know, play Nate Peterman and more or less tank? I know Paul's offended by that word. So we'll say,
I would say offended. How much it actually works. That is,
I think, sure, and we'll say like explore the younger crowd, and then yes. You know, not feel bad about the better draft pick. But we'll save that for another day. I think we should get to the fun part. We've handled the business, and you know, business up front and party in the back. I think we should.
You're the mullet of podcast.
You know, we should go to the fan favorite fan fantasy schedule.
I don't think we've ever gotten anyone commenting on any of these things. Okay. Well,
I'm a fan of it, and it's my favorite part. So this is our third year of doing this, by the way. Think about how quickly time goes. This is our third year. For folks who are new or who have forgotten, you know, there's a grand tradition, of course, picking football teams when you find out the schedule and then when the roster settled and then the day before the game. And by the time, you know, the season starts, you've picked these teams 8, 9, 10 different ways. And we will make more serious picks as we get closer to the season. But since we have a whole summer to fill, what we have come up with, what is Scott's brainchild, and perhaps the single greatest thing Scott has ever thought of, perhaps, not for sure, perhaps, is the fantasy schedule that we do 4 games at a time, wherein Scott sets parameters for how the game shall be played. And there's really no good way to explain it, so we're just going to sort of jump right in here after all this. But I'm excited, and I think if you like what you hear, you should leave your thoughts on these games and what you would pick, as well as any suggestions for future constraints. But Scott, get us started here.
So this one's exciting. I'm looking forward to this one. So the season starts, Bills home versus the Jets. In this particular case, the Bills and Jets players, they make it to the stadium, but they are, I don't know, there's a practical joker who glues all the doors shut to all of the state to their locker rooms. So literally they can't get out of the stadium. Everyone's ready to play the game. They got to play the game. Who's going to play the game? They got some extra equipment lying around. So they literally they go out into the parking lot and they find 11 Buffalo Bills fans and they find 11 New York Jets fans.
Oh boy.
And they take them and they put them on the field and they make them play football. And that is the game. And now we talk about what happens next.
I don't know. It's a family show. Can we talk about what actually happened next?
22 men enter the field.
Someone goes through a table before the end of this game. That is for sure.
There's not a table left in the stadium.
Not a one. Oh my. Well done.
Yeah. Holy hell.
So let's see. I mean, I don't know if I have an answer yet, but let me see if I can think about some of this.
Think about the drivers.
I'm trying to ruminate because, you know, don't get me wrong. When we were going to the bar we used to go to, God rest its soul, since it is now since shuttered, you know, we saw a Jets fan not wind away in line for the bathroom. Mind you, he was the first person in line, so he had to wait for one person to finish, and decided to piss on the wall outside of the restroom, causing our friendly bartender to go up to him and be like, you know, you pissed on the wall. Why'd you piss on the wall? He's like, come on, why would I piss on the wall? I'm like, I don't know. Why would you?
As you, Paul, as you're in the middle of telling about the pissing on the wall, you are Zooling.
Oh, damn it. All right, I'll log off.
The soul of that Jets fan is haunting Paul as he departs and returns.
Yeah, so he did have to get – I think he was removed from the bar, which was –
Yes, I think he was. I think they did – I think he was ejected at that point.
Yes, during the heyday of the Rex Ryan is when they all started coming and doing their J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets chant. So I think the good news is for Bills fans is there's just going to be more Bills fans – there, so you're going to have a larger pool, and hopefully from the larger pool you'll be able to select better football players. I think the problem is you're also in Buffalo, and what happens is you can just drink sooner if you live in Buffalo, and so you'll be drunker. And I
think watch online, Bills fans will be, and hopefully not
tonight. And so I think that you have the potentially higher talent level of the Bills fans competing with the potentially less drunk nature of the Jets fans.
Yeah, you can see this game getting away from the Bills fans as it gets longer and the effects of alcohol and exhaustion begin to kind of really wear on them. I don't know if they got the legs.
Right, and then they sort of embody the whole, you know, woe is us as Bills fans attitude. Because, you know, they don't have any mental acumen, really. They're just sort of, you know, screaming from the stands. You know, I think in that case, and I think that, okay, I'll tell you what. If listeners to this podcast were the 11 people on the team, I would pick them. But unfortunately, most of those people are in Europe. They're probably not coming to the home opener. And so I'm going to say, you know, and if you don't like my answer, I encourage you to find out where Paul lives in Buffalo and take it out on him. I'm going to say Jets fans win. And it's not close. There's no field goals or extra points, so it's a multiple of six. And I'll say, you know, it's 36 to 18.
All right. I think Frank's analysis is largely spot on. I do live, I found out while researching population density in the most densely populated region in the Buffalo, New York area, the 90th most densely populated region in the United States, where New York City is 10 of the top 11, of course. Anyway, enough of that. I think Frank's on to something here. I think the Bills fans are going to they're gonna start drinking earlier. I think they're going to complain and moan about penalties. And I think generally we will just lose hope in life relatively early on. This is not to debase anyone listening, like we said. But let's face it, the videos are on YouTube. We've seen what we're capable of as a fan base.
Yeah. Someone's going to say that we need to take a flyer on little Jimmy because he tries really hard, and that's going to be the end of it.
I disagree with how it's going to go, though. I will say I think the Bills are going to stay into this game for a while. I think they're actually going to have a late lead, and then I think a Bills fan, I'm just going to name him. Let's say his name is LP Jossman, is dropping back to pass and fumbles with like less than 2 minutes to go, and it's run back to touchdown. So I'm going to say that happened, and I'm going to say 28-24 Jets fans.
I think you guys are underestimating the athleticism that it takes to put someone through a table, or to spin around on a dizzy bat like 15 times in a row while super drunk, and then fall into a thing and get right back up. So I'm confident that the Bills fans come out on top of this. Again, it's not going to be a pretty game. I get that, but I'm fine with us putting in the over twice. So I'm going to say 14-7, despite the crackling that I hear in the background.
Sorry, I'm getting cracked. I'd like to point out the only person not from Western New York is picking the Bills fan.
They do what I know. So on to week two, which is at the Panthers. So this is a bit of a crossover fun for the WWE and the NFL in attempt to kind of get some crossover synergy. The game is replaced, and you know, Carolina's a big wrestling country, I feel like, so they would enjoy a good old-fashioned steel cage match.
Slop
tag team. Tag team. With you know, Carolina's own Cam Newton and linebacker Luke Kuechly, who's still on the team, right? I think.
Yeah. Sure.
Versus and this is who I went with from the Bills. I feel like Kyle Meatball Williams is kind of he could have been a wrestler in another life. He was an actual wrestler in college, if I recall.
Right.
And then I feel like Jerry Hughes is the guy who's gonna try and sneak a steel chair into the steel cage match. So I want him in there. But if you guys have thoughts on who would represent the Bills in a cage match, I'd be interested in hearing them. And then I have a way that this ends already planned out in my head.
All right. I just want
to quickly clarify that as Scott's wrestling is scripted and fake, and the rest of us are going to talk about a real wrestling match, just like real WWE wrestling.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I can make my decision relatively quickly here, Scott, but I need to know one provision. Is this a no disqualification match?
Sure. This is no DQ. Yeah.
No, it is no DQ. Then I got to go with the Bills. I mean, think about the stuff that Hughes will get away with. I mean, think of the stuff he does on a football field, for crying out loud. So I think he's going to get dirtier than Cam and Kuechly are ready for. I think Meatball is, you know, kind of like that John Tenta earthquake type. You know, he's going to be difficult to knock down. He's going to be fairly dominant. Cam Newton, tall, athletic, very much John Cena-ish in terms of his size and strength, and that'll make him a great wrestler. Kuechly, again, strong.
I kind of think of The Rock, actually, when I think of
Cam. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's got that charisma, too, a little rockish charisma. And he also made a child molesting robot. Very few people know. So
Kuechlybot 9000.
Yeah. And on that note, I'm still going to pick that. I think the no DQ just bodes too well in the Bills' favor here, and I've got to say they can play dirtier, and they're gonna pull this one out.
Very nice. I like this, and I like this because there's some other stuff that I don't know if Scott was thinking about, but this, of course, is the revenge match for both the Panthers and their former front staff.
I did kind of think about that a little bit after I
and
already
so what you know for me I'm also going to pick the Bills. I think they're going to definitely win this no DQ match. I'd like to see the meatball splash from the top of the cage, not just from the top of the ropes, but I want like the from the top of the cage. Let's go. I think that what's going to happen is, in classic cage fashion, because as you know, in a cage match, there's actually two ways to win. You can pin your opponent, but if you escape the cage, you also win. And I think what will happen is Cam Newton will not want to get involved. I don't know if you remember his Super Bowl performance, but I think towards the middle of this match, he's going to start looking to go down and hide. And, you know, he's going to play a little soft. And Kuechly will get it. And Kuechly, I think he'll have the upper hand for a little while. And he'll be looking to escape the cage. And as he's going through the door, in classic Mr. Fuji style, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott will be there, and they will blow salt smoke into his eyes. He will be blinded.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Right, because they're there, and you know they pretended like they were just watching the match, but here they are, and they're, you know, there's no DQ, and he'll stumble back in, and I think, you know, Hughes will hit him with a spear and roll him up 1, 2, 3, and it'll be controversial and it'll be upsetting for a lot of people, but you know the Bills are going to come away with the victory.
Okay, well, I also had a bit of a twist ending. I kind of saw it playing out with the Bills players kind of, you know, I mean, yeah, Cam kind of, you know, he's definitely got some athleticism to him, but I really feel like it's it's going to be tough to really get Kyle or Jerry down, even, you know, with the weight and height advantage. So I feel like that, you know, they're on their last ropes. They're putting Cam and Luke Kuechly down. And then all of a sudden, out of the background, what do you hear? You suddenly hear the theme song, Mr. Perfect.
Oh my God. All of that's Mr. Perfect's music.
Mr. Perfect's music comes in, and Tom Brady and Bill Belichick start walking toward the stage.
No.
And they enter the cage match. And then at that point, Kyle Williams immediately drops dead to a heart attack. And then Brady, he gets Jerry Hughes tries to hit him with a steel chair. Brady just laughs. He has some sort of concrete reinforced steel chair that he brings in. He hits Jerry Hughes with it, and then it's over. It's done.
Yeah.
It's like one punch, and then everyone's booing. The crowd's just going insane. It's very, again, very controversial ending, but it's just that's how I see it going. That's kind of
right. I'm picturing like Bash at the Beach 96 level littering after this finish.
Yeah, no, it's not pretty after that. It's the last time we have
Orchard Park screw job forever.
Exactly. So I don't know who gets the win there. I guess the Patriots get the win there in my book, but
they always do
on the season.
So the game three is home versus the Broncos. And so this is a bit of a takeoff on one of our favorite fun things that we'll do, and we'll probably do a little version of this later in the season, but this is a bit of a time travel game. And so literally we're not having the 1991 conference championship between the Broncos and Bills, one of the great Bills moments as they head to another one of their four Super Bowls in the early 90s. So we're going to go back in time. We're bringing that team into the future, and they are going to play. This is the NFL kind of, this is when you get your Madden, you get your Legends team. This is the 91 Bills of Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas, James Lofton, Don Beebe, Andre Reed, Bruce Smith, Cornelius Bennett, Daryl Talley, the whole gang versus the current Denver Broncos, who are certainly not slouches. I mean, clearly not where they were 2-3 years ago when Manning was taking them to the Super Bowl, but still a pretty solid team in terms of, you know, a very good defense and then, you know, some talent on offense with, you know, your CJ Andersons, and they picked up Jamal Charles in the offseason. And they got to figure out the quarterback between Trevor Siemian and, Paxton Lynch or whoever will be it. So I'm interested in first your guys' line on this game. Like, what's the betting line with the Bills? Bills, I think I said Bills at home, right?
Yep.
Yeah, home versus the Broncos. And then how the game plays out.
Now, these Bills players are at their level that they were at in 91, right?
Literally, the 1991 team was jogging onto the field when the portal opened up and they came into the, you know, there's a bit of time travel sickness that's going to wear off before kickoff. But other than that, they're good to go.
All right, good. Because that's a big difference, because my initial concern is that, you know, that two-thirds of the Bills' interior offensive line is, in fact, dead. So, without Hall, without Farad, who is filling in for probably an injured Glenn Parker, it's going to be tough with that. So this changes the scope of it, yes.
So they've had time to prepare for Denver, correct?
So that, I don't know. That's a good point. I did just say that they were literally about to run onto the field. So I'm going to say no.
Okay.
No. And they're also probably
they
not.
They did prepare for the 1991 Denver Broncos. Correct?
They did prepare. Yes, they know who the Broncos are. They are familiar with the team itself. They know the logo on some level. We'll have the Denver Broncos wear their like throwback uniforms for this, just for fun.
They'll see Elway. He just will be in the press box versus on the field.
Paul, you zooled again.
Oh, shit. All right, logging off.
Okay. This is just a dagger, really. I mean, I so much momentum. I know,
in this made-up fake stint that's here to.
I know, and then now the other podcast has all the momentum, Scott.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I will say that Vegas will say the 91 Bills, different team, different era. Like, they can't keep up with the modern kids. You know, they're healthier and stronger, and football's more sophisticated. And I think they'll make the Broncos a favorite.
Denver's kind of a public team, so there is going to be some movement on that side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say Broncos are going to open as 4-point favorites over the 91 Bills. But then I think what's going to happen is Jim and the boys are going to show them how it's done. Yeah. And they're just going to take this team out to the goddamn woodshed. And because they'll say, like, I was throwing footballs when you were pissing your diapers and you weren't even born yet. And this is how we play football, especially with, you know, especially if the one thing that might trip them up, especially when actually what will happen is Jim will say, are you telling me there's no such thing as offensive pass interference anymore? And they have to stay five. They have to stay.
Yeah, the rules.
Like the offensive passing rules are going to be much in their favor. I think it's going to cut against them a bit on defense, but I think once Jim gets it under his belt and the guys figure it out, there's going to be no stopping this team, and they're going to blow the doors off. It's going to be 48-30 Buffalo, and they're just going to take it to Denver.
Yep. Okay. The Bills won the 1991 AFC Championship game 10-7, so I thought about picking that, but I'm picking 51-3 Bills. That's what I got. I went with the previous year's score. You look at
the mini Broncos.
Yeah, that's, you know, nothing against Von Miller and company, who, yes, they won a Super Bowl 2 years ago, but look at it. Look at this lineup. Jim Kelly, Hall of Fame. Thurman Thomas, Hall of Fame. James Lofton, Hall of Fame. Andre Reed, Hall of Fame. Wolford, Richter, Hull, Farratt, Ballard. Four of those five were Pro Bowlers. And that's just the offense. So how are you going to stop that offense with just – yes, the Broncos have a great defense. This is one of the best offenses of all time. On the defensive side, you got some weaknesses, but you also have Bruce Smith and Bennett and Conlin and Bailey, whose son plays with the Buffalo Sabres. Daryl Talley and Nate Odoms. You have Smith and Kelso. And this is a stacked lineup. It makes me sad to almost read it.
Wait till Shane Conlin gets his hands on Jamal Charles. And he pokes him in the eye, because that's what you did in the
90s. Yeah, absolutely. No, I feel like Frank's a little skeptical. I feel like Vegas is still going to appreciate the talent difference between the 91 Bills and the current team, even if there is some public money and you wonder about them adjusting to the rules. I still think they have to put the game at least even, just based off the Bills, kind of, again, how dominant they were coming off of the 90 season. And coming into this game. So I would say I think it's going to be a pick 'em for Vegas. And I think, which is still saying something, because that would mean, you know, if this was in Denver, Denver might get a little bit of a favoritism. But I still think that, yeah, and I agree. I don't think it's going to be a complete blowout. I think the Broncos can kind of keep it close just by getting some pressure, you know, kind of slowing things down a little bit, taking a little air out of the ball. But I still think with the K-gun kind of humming there, I still think we can end up putting up at least 30, and I don't think they get past 10. So I'd say, yeah, like 34, you know, 14 maybe, or 34-10, something like that.
I think I got to apologize to you and the rest of the space-time continuum, though, because before they get sent back to actually play the Broncos in 1991, I accidentally and didn't – not accidentally, but I may have slipped a copy of the Super Bowl 26 tape into Thurman Thomas's bag in hopes that they would watch it. And
yeah, what is the note that you write them to stick in their bag?
Don't lose your helmet.
Don't lose your helmet's one. Like, isn't it just like...
Don't tell Bruce to ride. Not to challenge the offensive line and the...
Yeah, there's that one. That's a good one. Yeah, that's right. Good. I just have enjoy the ride. I just have enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
Don't worry about winning. Like, because I don't know. I mean, the 91, that's the thing. The 91 is the... Super Bowl 25 was the one where it was really like... There were a couple things that really could have swung that game pretty easily.
Right.
After that, you know, it got a little more kind of dicey about exactly.
Yeah, 25 and 28 are the ones where, like, oh, the Bills were in that. 26 and 27 are like, oh, well,
I think the moment went downhill was once the national anthem.
Yeah.
Well, is zooming again, which is terrible.
I'm going to log off and tell you why.
Okay. We have to log back in to tell us, but okay.
I will.
Also, turn off your...
Turn off your... He's gone. Vanished. Ninja vanished. Frank, are you still there?
I am still here. Sorry, I was on mute for a second as I was.
I am back, and if I'm not Zooling, my suspicion is whenever I take the initiative to try to watch to put the baseball game on using my wireless Fidelity, I am just destroying. I'm just using way too much bandwidth and destroying the whole podcast.
Good to know you're fully committed to paying attention to this podcast. By the
sorry,
way,
sorry, we're bored.
If you have a baseball game on, that's a lot like watching clothes dry in the background.
I'm also loading the dishwasher as we do this, so you know, behind the scenes. Anyway, I may have created a time paradox, and I apologize.
That's fine. We'll see where time goes in the future, but for now, we flash back to the present. Wow, I didn't even know what I was doing there. We're going back to the future, and the fourth game in our little quartet is at the Atlanta Falcons. And so this is actually a fairly conventional. There are not too many things that have changed. There's no time travel. There's no weird diseases. There's no animals on the field. There's really just one little wrinkle. And that is that in this game, the Bills are essentially, the game starts with essentially 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. There's no gimmick or anything else. It's really just 5 minutes left to play in the game, barring overtime. And then at this point, the Bills are up. They put on the scoreboard 28-12. The Bills are just up 28-12 for some random reason. And then they've also got the ball. And just randomly, they just picked, I don't know, like third and one on the own 36. So 5 minutes left. Bills up 16 points with the ball, third and one on their own side of the field. And that's kind of the game situation. So, you know, obviously it's a little one-sided, I guess you could say. But how do you think that might play out? You know, would the Falcons be able to pull off, a stunning comeback in the last 5 minutes of that game? I don't know. I mean, it's just something interesting to think about. I don't know.
I think I've got it all planned out, unless you want to go first, Frank.
No, go, please.
Before I start Zooling again, inevitably.
Yes,
that's true. This is what I asked. They got third one, their own 36. Handed to LeSean, 2 yard loss. Bills are going to punt the ball. Matt Ryan drives him down. Great catch by Julio on 1 3rd and 12 play right at the opening of the series. They get in the end zone quickly, but about 2.5 minute drive. So 2.5 minutes to go. They get the 2-point conversion, 28-20. Kickoff. Couple timeouts are used. The Bills go for it on like a 3rd and 5 after two decent runs. Try a pass, get nowhere, kick it back, punt it back away to the Falcons. So Falcons now starting about their own. Great punt, by the way, by Colin Schmidt, like 12-yard line. Few passes here and there. Falcons are running low on time at this point. They've got it all the way down to the Bills, 38 or so. There's 17 seconds left. Ryan realizes he's just got to let it fly. Lets it fly deep in the end zone. Off of Tre'Davious Jones's helmet, off Tre'Davious of Ronald Darby's. I made him up. Tre'Davious Jones. What the hell is the first? Tre'Davious Wright? What the hell is
Wright? Zay Jones. Jones is the second rounder.
That's right. I married them. They are a couple now.
That's an interesting development.
Yeah. So, yes, off of Ronald Darby's knee into Jones's hands, touchdown, 28-26. Matt Ryan can't find anyone on the 2-point conversion, decides to QB sneak it into the end zone, 28-28. We've got about 10 seconds left. So squib kick, Bills field it, immediately fumble. Falcons get the ball back, 18-yard line, 6 seconds left. Line up, field goal, and as one would expect, bad snap over the head. Picked up by Bills special teams ace Colt Anderson, run into the end zone. Bills win 34 with the extra. They missed the extra point, so they win 34-28.
Wow!
So that's how I'm seeing this game go down.
That's pretty impressive
and oddly specific.
Yeah, oddly. That's kind of weird.
I think, and my rationale being the Bills are the king of blowing, games like this. But I think they've been dethroned. I think the Falcons are a team that can blow it better than anyone.
That's what she, okay. I feel like you guys are trying to reference something and I'm not really getting it. Because I just looked at this game and said, well, it's week four. It's a non-conference game. And so, of course, the Bills are probably just going to complete that 3rd-and-1 and kind of grind out the game and win it. Like, they might end up giving one touchdown to the Falcons, and it looks closer than it was. But this is exactly the type of typical win that wouldn't help anything.
Yeah. On our way to our 4-0 against the NFC South.
Precisely. Precisely.
2-6 against the AFC East.
Yeah. As
Scott, I think it would snap the Bills' longest stretch of not having beaten an opponent. I think the Falcons haven't beaten since like the mid-90s, and it's like the longest gap they have. So it would accomplish that.
I think sometimes, and I think Scott plans this on purpose, you just have to, you know, realize that sometimes at the root, these are just sometimes it's just a football game's going to happen, even though there's all these crazy constraints. And I think this is the one where you're like, oh, that was kind of boring. And yeah. Because then what it does is you get a week of everyone saying, well, they beat the Falcons and they went to the NFC Championship game last year. So maybe this 1-3 start isn't as bad as it looks.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we'll be looking forward to our next quartet of games in the wacky schedule next time.
You know what I realized we didn't have on the agenda, gentlemen, that we should at least reference quickly is what about the rule changes?
We have rule changes? I guess I got to look into those.
Yeah, in the future, all games will be played by picking fans at random from the crowd.
That's an interesting game rule change.
I don't know if you guys saw that one, yeah.
No, can we write down the rule changes and talk about them next week?
Sure.
Okay.
Podcast
next time.
Right. We didn't really get very many Facebook questions because I didn't let anybody know we were doing a podcast today. But did you get any Twitter questions?
Nope. I put out one message and we got followed by a random bot.
Very good. So, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, random bot. I will say that Brian Punt, you know, gave us a picture of Mr. Bean on the Facebook, which was nice. You can always find us facebook.com/bbillsmny or bbillsmny on Twitter. And you should do those things if you are a social media person. We would be happy to, meet with you socially.
If you're not a social media person, you can send any letters or cards to Buffalo Bills maybe next year, P.O. Box 4582, Buffalo, New York.
11111.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yep. Care of Terry Pagula.
If you would like a response, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to that address, and we'll be happy to send you an autographed post-it note.
You can call us at 911.
No, please don't do that.
Ask for Scott Appleton. Sorry, shouldn't have said
Scott that. Appleton sent me. I win a prize.
Okay. Well done on the first four games. I can't wait for the next four games. I'm very excited.
Thank you.
This day in Bills history, and then it's time to mosey.
I agree.
Paul, this day in Bills history.
Oh, this day in Bills history? Yeah. No. I just kind of wanted to zone out there. So, yeah, this day in Bills history, we're going to go back
to. How's the game going?
What's going on?
Yes. No, I don't even have the game. I can't even turn on the baseball game because it's going to screw up the podcast. Maybe in my brain, I'm just distracted by not knowing what's going on in the game. I am fully committed to this. So, I went back to 2001 and 2002 on this. So the 2002 headlines, these were just depressing. Video footage of Bill's training cap, Bledsoe to Moles. Donahoe Williams era taking shape. That makes me quiver just a little bit. That Williams, by the way, was Greg Williams. There was Josh Reed, firsthand report. If his playing ability is anything like his personality, oh geez, oh here's the worst. This is a quote about Mike Williams. If his playing ability is anything like his personality, Mike Williams is certain to be a Hall of Famer. Oh, that's terrible. Great. Yep. So we're gonna go back to 2001 because the Bills actually did something on this day. They hired a director of pro personnel. Now, that the trivia question will be who this director was. I'll give you some hints. He was a pretty highly regarded man, but after in the long run, he proved to be a pretty normal dude. And, you know, what happened was they ended up having to fire the hombre in 2010. Can you name this Bills pro personnel director?
I'm going to say that the name of that director is, I think his name was like something like John Guy or Jay Guy or something. And I don't know why I'm feeling that way. It might be because of some really obvious hints, but I don't think that that's it. I think it's actually Eddie Valenzuela, who also was a Guatemalan boxer who qualified for the 2008 Olympic Games at flyweight. I think that he also then went on. Yeah. He had previously, when he was about like 15, he was also director of Playboy. Mm-hmm.
Frank, any guesses on your end after Scott's?
When was he ultimately fired?
2010. He was with the team 2002, 2010. He did interview for the head coaching gig that eventually went to Chan Gailey.
Yeah, I don't know. I will say Guy Incognito.
Bills made two hires that day. Pro scout was Eddie Valenzuela. And the director of pro personnel was indeed John Guy. So, you know, well done, Scott, on both fronts there.
Winner.
And it was, it's funny to read all the hopefulness of it. Dono Guy joins Bill's director of pro personnel. He seems to have all these great credentials. And then, yeah, we know what happened. So hope. It's a dangerous thing on May 24th. And that is
indeed.
This day in Bills history, May 24th, 2001. I'm just going to turn on the baseball game again. Let me know if you need any other segments. I'm just kidding.
Well, we got to get out of here so Paul can watch this game. That's 5-1 in the fifth. Roark, who...
Spoiler alerts. Come on. Yes.
Well, I'm sorry. I thought you were just going to turn the game on. Anyway, if you enjoyed us sort of fumble-fucking our way through this podcast, man, have we got a show for you, because that's what we do. But no, we're very happy to be here, and we enjoy our podcast, and we think you will too. We think you do too, because you're listening to it, and you've listened to the end. You can let your friends know about us. You can find us on iTunes. Search Buffalo Bills maybe next year. You can search Buffalo Bills podcast on Google, and we tend to come up on the first or second page. bbillsmny.wordpress.com is our blog where we host our podcasts. We have an article. We actually have two articles that are about 70% done each, but these are huge articles. These are much bigger articles. They're sort of like the George R.R. Martin of Bills posts. But they're going to be fun when they're done. And they'll be done before the season starts, so keep an eye for that. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, which, as I said before, bbillsmny, bbillsmny@gmail.com. And that is all the ways you can get a hold of us that we're going to tell you about anyway. We appreciate you listening. If you have questions, comments, get a hold of us. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much. Until next time, which will probably be, what's next? We got OTAs now.
OTAs, I think, is this one of our bigger gaps? I can't remember because we've done the OTAs.
Yeah, we're into the real dark period now. I mean, theoretically, we could have gone to OTAs this time, but right. Who cares?
Like, they can't tell you anything, and so we can't talk about anything. But we'll you know, certainly if big news happens, we'll pop back up, and certainly before, you know, preseason starts, we'll be here and we'll be talking stuff. We have, of course, you know, the fantasy schedule to get through. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Have a good night. Until next time, my name is Frank.
I'm Paul.
Good night, everyone.
I'm Scott.